Hi, and welcome back to the Prepare Podcast. On the Prepare Podcast, we meet with women of faith and in ministry to hear from their experiences and wisdom to help prepare us in our faith pursuits and callings. Thanks for listening. I'm your host, Sarah McCullough. Today, Arise and Shine Women's Conference guest Tasha Morrison joins us to share about her ministry called Be the Bridge. Be the Bridge is transforming the church through a discussion-based curriculum centered on racial reconciliation. We also get to learn a little bit more about Tasha and that, for example, she loves Christmas movies year-round. Enjoy learning about Tasha and Be the Bridge. Hi, Tasha. Welcome to the Prepare Podcast. So glad you're here with us.
It's great to be here.
You know, the Prepare Podcast is a Salvation Army podcast where we invite women of faith and ministry to share their experience and wisdom to prepare and equip us, listeners, in our faith, pursuits, and callings. And we've been inviting Arise and Shine guests onto the Prepare Podcast so that our delegates and maybe would-be delegates would get to know our guests and get excited and just get a glimpse of each of your ministries, because all our guests are really in the trenches of different various ministries. And we're going to hear about yours today. So, but first, before we do that, Would you introduce yourself, Tasha Morrison, to our listeners?
Yes, I am, as she said, Tasha Morrison, and I am the founder and current president of Be the Bridge. And, you know, I live here in the Atlanta area. I just relocated from Austin, Texas, back to what I call my hometown of Atlanta. And, you know, Be the Bridge is a ministry that is really one of the things we're trying to do is to equip the church, capital C church, the body of Christ, the people who attend church, basically to be a transformative and distinctive voice in the conversation surrounding racial healing. And so we want the church to live up to its credibility as it relates to having righteous relationships with one another. And so, and that place of shalom. And so we want to see the church be a credible witness for that. And so we want to create resources and tools to help the church do that. We want to really inspire the church to begin having these conversations, these difficult conversations.
So that's about Be the Bridge. But tell us about more about Tasha. Who is Tasha?
Well, you know what? I love leadership. I love people, you know, and because I love people, that's probably what makes this work even more difficult. I enjoy just the work of the Lord. So when you talk about, you know, Tasha, I feel like, you know, I'm just this fun, loving lady that God has just given just brief opportunity to partner in this work, that this greater work that he's doing. And so, like I said, I just moved to the Atlanta area. You know, one of the things that I enjoy laughing.
Yeah.
You have to have a great personality in this work. You can't take things so seriously sometimes. And so I enjoy that. As I was telling you before, I am a tea girl, not a coffee girl. And so I enjoy
tea. Make sure I got that right. You said a tea girl, not a coffee girl.
Not a coffee girl.
Got it.
Enjoy tea. I am really into my teas. And so I'm into red teas right now. So, I am a lover of all things Christmas. So I'm one of those people that will make you sick, you know, starting in October.
Oh, you're like the stores. You're like Hobby Lobby or Target. You've got the decorations out early.
Yes. And that was the thing about moving this year during the holidays. I couldn't, you know, get into it like I really wanted to because of the move, but I'm going to make up for it this year. And I am one of those people, I watch Christmas movies all year long.
Oh, wow.
So not I record them so that I can watch them during the year.
I love learning this about you. This is actually what I really wanted to hear. I'm like, I love learning those little quirky things about people. So you're doing perfect. Keep going.
Yes, and Christmas music and all. I don't do the Christmas music as much as the, as the Christmas movies. Mm-hmm. I don't really start music until about July or August.
Oh, you know? Wow.
The movies. And so, yeah, those are a couple things, you know, about me, you know. And you know what I think about it? I love what the Christmas season stands for. And you see just this, mm-hmm. this unity. There's this peace. Like, there's so many things that come along with that. And I think in this work and just in life, sometimes life can be difficult. And I think it's a way of escape in a sense. But I've always been like that. I think it also connects me with my grandmother, mm-hmm. Who's with me, who that was her favorite holiday. And so we've always done Christmas really big in my family. So I think that's, you know, one of the traditions that, you know, I carry on. And I love the decor. That's a big thing for me. I love, decorating and, you know, all those different things. I'm not a chef.
Okay.
I'm not crafty, you know, any of those things. I am actually single with no children also. So, okay. And I enjoy my single life. When in the world that I'm living in, you know, sometimes I think about, wow, when I finish this trip, I'm going back home and I don't have to worry about anyone disturbing me, you know.
So you truly get to relax and recharge your batteries.
But it's just, you know, but the thing is, there's always something, you know, with it. But so there's a lot to speak to even on that, being single and being in ministry and having been on staff in a church. And my background is youth and children. And so just being in that world without having children, you know, there's a lot to speak to as it relates to that also. So those are little things about me. I hope that's enough.
Yeah, no, that's great. Well, I did a little, you know, homework and I was watching some videos of you and learning that you, you're originally from, is it North Carolina?
Yeah, North Carolina. Mm-hmm.
And you came to know Jesus when you were 18 in college. Is that right?
I was actually a little bit older. I was almost 20.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I was 20. I was in college. And, you know, the thing about that, and I tell this story, is, you know, growing up in a military town in Fayetteville, Fort Bragg, you know, I grew up in a lot of diversity, you know, but just not understanding, you know, how you don't understand as a child the world around you and how it works and how it functions. Mm-hmm. But I grew up in a community, a neighborhood that, you know, a lower middle class neighborhood that had just a wealth of people. It was a new neighborhood. And so, you know, one neighbor, you know, diagonal, they were Asian Americans, you know, one neighbor was white on one side, one neighbor was black on the other side. I had neighbors that were Native Americans, Lumbee Natives. I had, you know, my friends, you know, down the street, the Nazarios, you know, they were Latino, you know. Mm. So I grew up in this environment and didn't know any difference. But you can grow up in those type of environments and also still be very naive. A lot of times people say, you know, I grew up in this environment, so I have some context. But if you're not having those conversations, and it wasn't like as kids we were having those conversations, but those experiences help give you a little bit of context, you know. Mm-hmm. So, you know, I didn't realize how blessed I was until you know, I was an adult. But going to college, you know, that's when I became a Christian, that's when my world became more segregated.
Okay.
Yeah. And so, you know, in college, you know, you go to college, and that's why college is such an important time, for people coming into this new world of young, what it means to be a young adult, and you know, you're still not fully responsible, but you have a lot more responsibility. This is where you're questioning a lot of things. And this is where things start. You start connecting the dots and, you know, you have different lived experiences. You're living among people from different cultures, different backgrounds, different ethnicities and stuff like that. And I remember, you know, I happened to move into a dorm that had several Christians, you know, that summer, you know, for orientation. My roommate there was a Christian. My best friend that I grew up with at the time, she was a Christian. And so but I was very confused, you know, like the denominational stuff, the theological things actually confused me. But it wasn't until when I was in college, there was an organization that they were on predominantly white campuses, and they were targeting African-Americans at predominantly white campuses. And that was because the organizations they had at that time in a varsity during that year, I'm not going to state the year because I'm going to date myself. During that time, they weren't really doing their focus wasn't diversity. And so, of course, the people that, you know, the campus ministry at that time, you know, in those campuses, they were reaching people that were like them. And so if you came from, you know, a homogenous environment, you know, the people that you were going to connect with and reach were people who look like you. And that's how they evangelized on campus. And so there was an organization that saw that and, you know, but they wanted to tap into, you know, just specifically Black students and making sure that we were hearing the gospel also. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, so that's how I came to Christ. But because, you know, the organization I was a part of was predominantly African-American, you know, I tell people all the time, I don't remember meeting, you know, and building a relationship, not just meeting. Of course, I met white people on campus, and you know, but I don't remember developing a real relationship with a white person unless that white person was a part of my group that hung around predominantly African American students, you know. And so, and I mean, and it wasn't like you didn't live with people or live in the same dorm, you were in classes, you had, you know, you ate with all these different things, but I cannot remember one real deep relationship that was built in college, you know, and that was contrary to my relationships in high school, middle school, and elementary, where I've always had, you know, this diverse group of friends. At that moment when I became a Christian, that stopped. And my life was segregated. And it's because the church is very segregated, mm-hmm. you know, and therefore, you know, and who makes up the church? People. And so, so when you look at, you know, how we evangelize and just the, you know, the history of the church and how the church became segregated, when you look at that history, we were living out just the foundations that has been set in the church today, you know, where, you know, the only reason why we have, you know, African-American churches or Chinese American churches or, you know, Filipino churches or, you know, Latino churches. The only reason we have those churches is because, you know, people of color were not allowed to worship traditionally in certain denominations, not just certain denominations. They weren't allowed to worship with whites, or even if they were, they were treated as second-class citizens within the church environment and structure. So therefore, our organizations that we built, this has become a tradition in the church. And so organizations that we built around, they're built around that brokenness, you know? You know, when we look at our history, and, you know, and so right now what we're trying to do is how do we break away from this? You know, what does that look like? Mm.
So a lot of what you just said, I'm guessing and assuming that it has impacted why you started Be the Bridge. Was there something, a specific interaction or a specific moment in time that you made the decision, all right, I'm having all these conversations, but I'm gonna make this into a ministry that other people can access these tools that I've developed?
Yeah, I think, you know what, when you look at my life and you look back at the threads, at some of the threads, like, this has always been a part of me. I just never had these conversations with outside of the Black community. And so I think one of the things, it's like there's this moment that we have, and I think I like to call it like this holy discontent. And there's things, you know, justice issues that I will have this discontent over, where when I hear things, like, I want to make other people aware, like, you need to know this. Like, I need to make sure you're aware of this. Do you know this is happening? You know? Mm-hmm. And sometimes, you know, in that naive and feeling that it makes other people discontent, just like it makes you discontent, not realizing sometimes that's what God is doing in your heart, you know, because he's calling you to something different. You know, he's calling me to speak to a certain issue. And so I think for me, a lot of it, you know, I was on staff originally. I was in corporate America for about 10 years. And then I was on staff also simultaneously with another church. And in that original church was predominantly African-American church, but we had several white people that were on staff, and we were in a lot of environments as people of color within this Christian world. We were in a lot of environments that were predominantly white, you know, and predominantly homogenous. So conferences that we would go to and all these different things. And I would go to these conferences and I wouldn't see anyone that looked like me. And you wonder, like, wow, why is it's like these two different worlds, these two different Christian worlds that you have, you know, and I would just be curious about that. And it wasn't until when I left that particular church and started working within the predominantly white space, I knew in the African-American church, we were always trying to attract and welcome more people who were not like us. Like, we were always open to that conversations. We were open to taking risks and going to conferences and events and churches that we knew we were going to be the only one. But we were very open to that. But when I went into other predominantly church spaces that were particularly white, one of the things I noticed is that it was about people coming to you, not really going into other spaces, you know? And so that was really different. So I think some of the thing that really catapulted, I was already feeling this discontent and really feeling, I would say, shameful about who we represent and what we have become, you know, and knowing that that was contrary to, the message of Jesus, and knowing that we weren't living up to our fullest potential, especially when we look at Acts and who was involved in different cultures and the different tribes and the different people that were involved in the first early church. It was a contradiction, and that's what the world needed to see. And I felt like we were emulating a lot of the world cultures, you know, instead of being this third space. And so what really happened is when Trayvon Martin, I think that there's a lot of people, especially a lot of Black people, that can point back to when you started paying attention. It's like we were kind of sleeping in a sense, and you start paying attention. And as I was having conversation, it was just amazing to me how this young man who was a child wasn't given any benefit of the doubt, the narrative that was created, like he was deserving to die for just possessing space, you know, like the dignity that was denied. And so I think that was a huge wake up call. So as I was having conversations, you know, there was just be this different perspective. And I'm like, wow, like, just realizing, you know, at this time I was in predominantly white spaces, and just realizing our worlds were so different. Our conversations were so different. We had no common language. We had no common history.
And the concerns of your heart were different.
Yes, it was totally different, where that shook me and nobody else. Everybody else was walking around like, it didn't happen, or like, it's not, there's no care in the world. Like, it didn't move. And it shows you just how we're different culturally. You know, those are from more European culture. They're more individualistic. Those of us that are majority minorities in the country were more collectivist. And so how that creates our lens, a lot of that shapes our values, our belief systems, all those things. So we're engaging in this work of God also from those, from our cultural lens. And so we even read scripture differently, you know, mm-hmm. Through those cultural lens. And so that was just really started really, really churning in me. And then I saw, you know, there were some movies that came out, and I knew that I would always get invited to come into these predominantly white spaces. But it seemed like when I wanted people to reciprocate that and do things that, you know, maybe where you were going to be the minority, there was always like basically, why would I want to do that? Like, it was kind of like, this way is the right way, you know, like you need to do what I'm doing. And I really started thinking about Christian culture and what is it. And, you know, Christian culture is not black culture, it's not white culture, but sometimes the things that we mistake what Christ-likeness culture is, we start mistaking it for our own personal cultural lens, you know? Mm-hmm. And I wanted to have some of these conversations with people. And I, at that point, I went to another conference, and I was living in Austin, Texas. And I was just really feeling othered in that city, in that community. Austin is a beautiful and great city, vibrant people, some of the nicest people you will ever meet in your life. But, you know, just in a lot of ways, completely blind, just like a lot of other places, to the segregation, you know, within the city. And I remember going to a Christian conference, just really wanting to seek out some familiarity with people. And that was the first IF gathering. I think it was in 2014. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and within that conference, I met, you know, several people, women of color. It was only about six at the time. Mm-hmm. I think about this with my friends. But anyway, one conversation led to another, meetings. And I was just really, it was a great conference, but I was really disappointed when I was several years before, as I was attending conferences, as I've always attended conferences, just seeing the lack of people of color in these spaces. It was just really started bothering me. And then you have all these things happening in our community where we need to be at the table talking to one another, but we're so segregated. It's like the world can't even look to the church for an answer or a solution because we're plagued by the same cultural things that they are plagued by. You know, the world is plagued by.
And when you say people that don't look like you, you meant that attended the, like, attendees, like delegates, as well as teachers from the stage and pulpit?
I'm talking about both. Teachers from the stage. You know, a lot of times we'll have one person or one person of color, you know, mm-hmm. something like that. And, you know, good effort, but that doesn't do anything. You know, like, it's like, you know, you can have 10 speakers and you have one person of color. Like, that's really, you know, but your world, your organization will only be as diverse as your life is. Mm. And so you start living that out, that expression will come through in your organizations, in your church, you know. And that's what I like to tell pastors, is this work starts with you in your heart. You know, things flow from the head down. So this starts with you. So let it start in your heart first, because you can't lead your people where you're not going, where you're not willing to go. So you can't tell people to diversify their life when you're not diversifying your organization, or your life isn't diversified. And when I'm talking about diversification, I'm not talking about tokenism. I'm talking about true, authentic relationships where you can pick up a phone and call someone and it's not weird for them to hear from you. Or people that you've invited over to your home. Like, who have you had in your home that did not look like you? And we can take that to all other levels when it talks about diversity, you know. And that's just that any leader should ask themselves questions like, who, you know, look at your social media, pick up your phone and you look at it, you know, your contacts, you know, and it wouldn't be odd for that person to hear from you. And who have you had in your home? You know, whose home have you been invited to and went. So it's not just inviting people into your space all the time, but what other spaces are you entering? Where are you placing yourself as a minority or in a place where you can be other, so you can have an experience of that feeling and just have some type of context, and you're getting to know people's stories, and you're getting to know them culturally, you're getting to know their families. You know, that helps you when we're seeing these headlines, that helps you have empathy rather than responding in apathy, because where you have assumptions and stereotypes, a lot of that comes from a lack of friendships. And so where your friendships begin, a lot of times those stereotypes and those assumptions will begin to diminish, you know. And so those are just starting points. And so I think, you know, for me going into these spaces and conferences, it tells I'm looking at a bigger story, you know. And so as I did that, you know, I had an opportunity to sit down with Jenny Allen with some other friends of mine, and, you know, and just sharing. We just started talking and sharing, and she had adopted a son from Rwanda, and, you know, just, you know, we talked all about that and talked about skincare and just all these different things. And, you know, and I'm like, okay, babe, you can't use no Bath and Body Works lotion on us. You know, we got to have some different types of, you know, but we were just having this fun conversation. And she was like, well, I wish, you know, but it was that the beginning of friendships. And so she said, I wish I would love for us to get together with some of my friends. And that's what we did. And that's what started these conversations. And in the midst of our conversations, all of this came from me going to a conference, seeing the lack of diversity, her being willing to hear my thoughts, not just thoughts on how, you know, this, you know, complaints, but also solutions. Mm-hmm. And then being willing to be a part of, you know, having this conversation. There was no organization. We kind of modeled it after restorative justice conversations, how you would have those, because a friend of ours had an organization that did that in Austin. And so we were using a lot of those principles and strategies and kind of the foundation of this bridge building work. And that's what Native tribes have done for centuries. You know, these are the ways that they've conducted tribal affairs and stuff like that. And so we did that. And then in the midst of our conversations, we were probably about 5 or 6 months into our conversations when some major headlining things happened. Ferguson happened. Mm. And we were able to talk through these things where they were given a totally different perspective from an inside view from a person of color that they would have never received. And so it made them think differently about this situation that was happening, because we were able to share experiences, and they had never heard the story of, you know, just how our parents, you know, I'm only one generation, how our parents were affected by segregation and school integration and, you know, just some of the inequalities and injustices that we've had to walk through personally, or our parents or our grandparents have had to walk through. They had never heard that. And I think in America, we do just such a disservice in how we strategically don't teach full history. You know, we should know and understand Native history and what happened to our brothers and sisters and the lands that we stand on, some of their ancestral things. We should know that. That should be a part of our story, because that's a part of America. We should know the history of African slaves, you know, but the thing we have is this romanticized view of slavery and then the systemic issues that come from that. So we were able to talk about these hard and difficult things. And just the ladies in our group, they had just this posture of they just had this heart posture of humility and a heart posture of, I want to learn from you. Mm. Yeah. Hear you. And think, because all the ladies except for one, they had adopted children from other countries or either domestically. And they wanted to know because they wanted to be better parents. So they came with a different, I feel like, heart posture than what some people come to the conversation with. But that is really what started and spurred this conversation. So as we were having this conversation, it was great. They were talking about it with their friends. And you know, their friends are like, well, how do I get in a group like this? And it's like, okay, I don't know how you get in a group like this, you know?
Where do we go from here?
Yeah, where do we go from here? And it was the kind of like, where do we go from here? Is kind of like what has birthed Be the Bridge.
So these are conversation-based groups. Do they meet weekly, monthly? How does it work?
Be the Bridge is the organization. We are really from the bottom up, in a sense. You know, I do understand that things flow from the top down. But, you know, when we start talking about church politics and bureaucracy and stuff like that, it's harder sometimes to get pastors to do this. There's so many layers, you know. But, you know, we wanted to create something that people like us, people who are lay leaders, people who are like us that are leading in our communities, that are leading in this Christian world, but maybe, you know, maybe we're on staff at a church, or maybe we're homeschooling our children, or maybe, you know, we're working in corporate America, or we have our own business, or whatever that is, where anyone can pick up this, you know, this guide and start having this conversation. It doesn't have to be filtered through church leadership. So you can do this in your community. You can do this with the book club. You can do this, you know, with their small group. You can do this and you know, with your family. Mm-hmm. And so as, and with us, we were all came from different churches. We all not, you know, some of a couple of us were on staff at churches, but most of us were just people who are concerned that want to see change. And so that's what Be the Bridge is. It's not chapters. It's not like you have chapters in your community. This is people led and people driven. We tell people to find a person of color to lead or to co-lead with you. And so sometimes that takes time because you have to start these conversations, start learning, educating yourself. And we have curriculum that we've developed to kind of help people with this process. But we tell people, you know, we give people resources to read. And so we want you to start groups. So these are groups that are started. We have over 700 across the country. I don't think I would ever know, because this is done so grassroots and people are supposed to register their groups, but sometimes people don't. So we find out I find out that there's a new group, even going into Facebook, when you have groups that you can create. And we have a private online group that I know my team will kill me if I say it, because we just always get an influx of people. But this group was 69 people, and now there's over 18,000 people.
What?
In this group. Yes.
Oh my gosh.
18,000 people in this group, and we have to have a lot of rules and regulations to have conversation online. But it's a private group, so you have to search for the name. It doesn't come up. But people in other states and cities have formed, you know, we tell people they can form their own private groups out of, you know, our group. So like if you're in the Dallas-Fort Worth area and you're looking for people to connect with, you know, there may be a group online that, you know, they have their group, because it's not like, you know, that people have websites and all these different things, because these are conversations that are having. And so I was just looking online, and the other day when I was pulling up something, Be the Bridge, you know, and I started seeing all these different groups, and these were just the ones that make themselves visible.
Right.
And I'm like, wow, I didn't know we had a group there. I didn't know we had a group there. You know, and of course, as the ministry grows, it's harder for me to know where groups are. But there's a group in Canada. There's a group in Uganda. It's just amazing because when you look, this work is connected with missions work, because until you really know the cultural dynamics and you start dealing with the historical context and all these different things, and you're able to do ministry better the more equipped you are from an American context, you know. Especially as it relates culturally. And so, you know, so we have missionaries that are expats and you know, in Uganda, that are actually having this conversation and making it fit within the dynamics of their Ugandan experience. And things are happening there, you know. But, you know, so I think it's basically conversations, groups, conversations that are, you know, led by Christians. You know, our message is about, is for the church. And so we don't apologize for that. Now, anybody can take our material and tweak it for their environment. That's, you know, we just want people having the conversation. So I have a friend that's, you know, that's agnostic, you know, that's having this conversation with other teachers, and she takes it and she just kind of tweaks it. But I've heard people that are, you know, are not people of faith that said to see people of faith having this conversation and having it in a healthy way, it allows them to see a glimpse of who God is, yeah. You know? And that's what we want to go back. When we go back to John 17, you know, and we talk about that oneness, that unity, mm-hmm. and they know you, me, by the love that you have for one another, you know, our unity, which is not sameness, but oneness, and which is different, you know, and sometimes we mistake those two, but not our assimilation, but our unity points back to who God is. And that is the greatest PR that we can give God, is how we live our lives and how we understand that we belong to one another and that we're a part of the same family. That's important, you know, for the unbeliever, you know, but when they see us divided, you know, denominationally, yeah. they divided politically, when we're not just complicit to the problem, we are not just a part of the problem, but when we look historically, Christians, Puritans, when we look historically, we constructed the problem. You know, right. we created infrastructure of segregated churches. So it's not when we try to get away from saying that this is, you know, an issue is not a gospel issue. It is very much so a gospel issue, mm-hmm. you know, just other issues that we take on. So I think it's important. And those are the conversations that we have to have with one another. And we have to see each other as brothers and sisters. And I say that a lot, and I remind myself a lot, because it's easy in this painful world, in this broken world, to disconnect and begin othering people and vilifying people, and people become your enemies, and not your brothers and sisters. Yeah. So I disagree with you, but we're still brothers and sisters. And yeah. so we need to have respect and grace, but also truth telling.
Yeah.
You know,
my old boss, she's still like a mentor to me. She has this, I think she got it from a book, but it, like a philosophy for how to have not necessarily conflict, but conversations that are honest, direct, and respectful. And so many times she's like, you're being respectful, but you're not being honest and direct. And those are hard pieces, because when you're honest and direct, you're vulnerable, and you're also making the other person vulnerable. And yeah. it can go one of two ways often. But when you piece it with that respect and honoring each other and the dignity layered in, you can have these hard conversations.
Right. And that's important, because sometimes like, you got to have a balance, because sometimes we're too graceful and we're not giving truth.
Right.
You know, not giving people truth. So we're doing a disservice, you know, we're not helping them deconstruct or dismantle those unhealthy cultures or components or identities or lenses that they're carrying. We're not helping them do that. But so you have to truth tell, and it's like, you have to give truth. I'm going to give it with grace, but I'm going to be direct in how I give that truth. And hopefully you sense love. Like, the reason why I do this, I mean, who wants to talk about this? I mean, I have so much to lose in doing this work. I like, if you heard me talk about my personality and the things that I like to do, like, I like peace, you know,
yes.
but I understand that there will be no peace without justice, you know. Yeah. I will work through conflict, and I don't ignore conflict, but who just enjoys conflict? Who enjoys living in tension all the time? I don't, you know. I have hope. And what I see in Revelation 7:9, that, you know, I don't want my brothers and sisters to be blinded by what's happening culturally, and to be to swallow this pill, these lies that we've swallowed for centuries. I don't want them to miss out, you know, and I don't want my brothers and sisters to see and to embrace inwardly in this heart without doing the introspection, this hierarchy that we live in, this racial hierarchy in this racialized society that we live in. So I want to be a truth teller in that, allowing them to see a glimpse of God's redemption and how he's able to restore and to redeem that which is broken, and how he is repairing us, you know, and preparing us for what's to come. And so, you know, and so that is the thing that drives me. No one wakes up and says they want to do this, because this comes with a cost. This comes with a burden. This comes, you know, a bridge gets walked on from both sides. Mm-hmm. This is not easy. Bridge building does not feel good. It doesn't mean that you're going to hear stuff that's going to make you feel good in this. No, if you, you're going to feel uncomfortable in this. You know, a lot of times, I have to do a lot of cultural development work at first, so we can understand how we see things culturally differently and why, so that we can lay the foundation for doing some of this work. It's going to cost you. It's going to cost you your time, mm-hmm. Because it's about educating yourself. You can't just say we're just going to love and, you know, and that's it. You know,
it takes intention.
Takes intention, you know, because, you know, the Bible, I mean, clearly the Bible says for to love our neighbor. Mm-hmm. And this is the thing. The word of God has not changed since slavery, since genocide. They had the Bible then, the same Holy Spirit that mm-hmm. we have, they had then. But why would those same scriptures were there?
Now, Tasha, I have a question, because you're segueing right into this question I have about roadblocks that you face as you have been building this ministry, because Satan does not want this to happen. So he's going to always throw things, throw a wrench, throw whatever it is to try to dismantle or derail the work, important work that you are doing. How have, no doubt, I don't even know, but I no doubt you faced some roadblocks along the way. What have you done? How have you faced those roadblocks and gotten through those moments?
Yeah, I think just with some of those roadblocks, a lot of time it could be, you know, barriers that people have. It could be personality, it could be denominational. It just could, you know, there's this historical truth. There's this historical truth, but then there's a truth that people think that they know. You know, so you're having to weed through all the lies that people have been told to kind of undo those things. And, you know, there's a lot of historical facts, there's, you know, documentation, all those different things that people didn't have the information for. So, you know, people, when you give people information, you know, sometimes they tend to make different choices and they do better. But I would say some of the roadblocks have been where we have idolized. There's certain things that we have made small gods in our life, and that being politics. Politics is a huge barrier, and divider of people is designed, you know, that way. And it sets, you know, as human nature, we're very tribal, and politics feeds into that, you know, the same way, you know, when you have like fraternities and sororities, like mm-hmm. if it's, you know, unchecked, what that can turn into. And I would say that's a huge barrier. And when you see Christians, where we're supposed to be this third space, and we are completely blind and arrogant in this conversation, that's, you know, it's hurtful, you know, because, you know, a thing that I had to kind of let go of in this work is that everybody's not going to like you.
Right.
You know, everybody's not going to welcome you into, the spaces that, you know, that people are not going to give towards this, because, you know, people give towards what makes them feel good, not what makes them feel pain or that they disagree with. And so just really, really being dependent on the Lord in this work, knowing that I'm doing the right thing. So it's just kind of like just taking the next step, the next step, the next step. What is that next step? And just doing the next right thing that I know that God is leading me. So I would say those are some of the hindrances that I see, and maybe some of the disappointments that I see, but being able to detangle that and understanding, you know, why people are blind. And who keeps people blind, you know, and how it is truth that makes us free. And how do I continue to speak truth in the midst of confusion and barriers and stuff like that? So, you know, to kind of continue to press on. And the thing is, you know, the same way when we come to the faith, we can't make someone become a follower of Christ. Mm-hmm. You know, we can't do that. That is not my work. And so I think a part of this, my position has to be a complete surrender, where I am not in control, and this is God's work, and these are his people, these are his children. And so I have to look at it in the sense where, Lord, you know, you work on their heart, you know, and kind of like I have to have this mindset of, you know, shaking the dust off my feet and continuing to move forward. And those who have ears to hear, let them hear. Those who have eyes to see, let them see. And, you know, everybody's not going to be called to do what I'm doing and a call to this work. But those who would beckon his call, let them come, you know, in that sense. And, so, and I can't be worried about the people who refuse to hear, that want to argue, or, you know, that's not, you know, that's a heart condition, and it's not my job to fix your heart.
Yeah. Now, for our listeners that are considering coming to Rise and Shine, or already have signed up, or want to be in your workshop, what can they, is there something, anything that they can do to prepare themselves for that teaching time?
Yeah, I think I would say, you know, definitely come with an open heart. Come knowing that you're going to feel a little bit uncomfortable. You know, I think what I like to do in the beginning of workshops is really give some glossary terms, because I found out that a lot of times that is a huge barrier, where people don't understand what words mean. You know, they hear the word race and they think, first of all, that it's biblical when it's not, you know, that it's a political and social construct. So when you start giving people, it kind of disarms them in the sense where, oh my goodness, like, if I would have known that, then I see this now. You know, they're able to see something because of a barrier that they had. And a lot of times that barrier is just a deeper understanding or a misconception that they had, or assumption that they had. And so I would say one way to prepare is just to surrender your heart and just begin to pray, like, Lord, what do you want me to hear? What do you want to speak to me? You know, and I think that helps people in this conversation. And then there's this, you know, there's some, you know, there's a lot of books. If you start, you know, following Be the Bridge and different on social media, there's different conversations that we're having. There's recommendations that we give where you can start doing that work ahead of time, where, you know, one book that, you know, we're recommending now is this book called Wide Awake. We have that you can download from our website. We have specifically for white people. We're working on something for people of color right now, but we have a thing called Whiteness 101, and just helps you deconstruct understanding what is white identity, what is black identity, what is that? You know, we have our identity in Christ, but also our ethnic identity is a part of who we are. And we see that in Revelation 7:9. So how do we deal with that? Like, how do we work through that? So I think having some of these conversations and having materials to start doing that, because some of what I will be doing is allowing people to understand culture and how it shapes, you know, our belief system. And so because that prepares us to do this work of racial reconciliation better, you know.
Yes.
And I use the word reconciliation because I use that, you know, looking at Second Corinthians. But, you know, some people say racial righteousness, you know, some people say racial inequity, you know, there's different words that people use. But ultimately, what we want is shalom, you know, that's what we're aiming for. So I would say just, you know, come with open hearts, come not thinking you have all the answers. Don't come thinking that just your experience makes you above someone else, or, you know, or because you know, you're from a certain ethnicity that, you know, you have all the answers. So I would say, you know, come just being open and willing to learn.
Yeah. So our theme verse for the conference is from Isaiah 60, verse 1. Arise, shine, for your light has come, and the glory of the Lord rises upon you. So Saturday morning at the conference, during our first session, that time includes a panel discussion called Sacred Conversations. And the discussion will focus in on inclusion and shining a light on spaces and opportunities to include others where we have let things like race, socioeconomic status, marital status, parental status, and many more things keep us divided and excluded. From your perspective, what are some easy areas of inclusion opportunities in everyday life?
I think that's really good. I think, you know, for me, you know, we all have certain privileges. And I think, you know, some of the things that I try to give examples with is, you know, there's a privilege I have being college educated and having come from the family that I've come from. That's not something that I did. It's just how God designed it. And so I would say, you know, under recognizing that, I think it's sometimes it's important for me to connect and engage with people. Maybe that's not their experience. Because what I'm doing is creating this cultural view and these lenses and this perspective, not really understanding the plight of maybe what someone is going through in the inner city, because I didn't grow up there. I grew up in suburbia, but being able to relate to my brothers and sisters that are in the inner city or that are in rural communities that have different lived experiences than I have. So it's important to even diversify your life like that. So, you know, my friends list looks different. So of course, a lot of my friends, we have a lot in common, but I also make a point to have relationships with people where our stories look different. You know, it's good to know someone who maybe grew up in Jamaica or, you know, that grew up in Bangladesh, you know, just to understand, you know, our different lived experiences. That helps broaden you. So I would say when you're talking about inclusion, make sure that inclusion is happening with your life. I mean, what does it feel like for someone who's in a wheelchair, you know, that were things that we take for granted, mm-hmm. You know, if they have to speak on the stage, you know, how are they going to get up there if there's no ramp to the stage? You know what I'm saying? Like, yeah. You know, there's different things that, you know, everything, a lot of things that we say and words that we describe and things that what we're creating from. There was a lady who was blind, who was saying, you know, one of the things about our guide is, you know, is of course written by people who can see, you know, like as far as they have sight, because some of the things that, how we say certain things, we're taking it for granted that everyone that's reading it can see, the ability to see. So, but I wouldn't think about those things if I hadn't had a conversation with someone who was blind, you know? And so I think, you know, just but being able to engage with people who are in different lived experiences with us. And I think that helps us even do this work, because a lot of times I use gender sometimes as a to make a point, where sometimes people can't understand something from a racial perspective. But when I put in a gender perspective, they're able to understand that that discrimination by either them because they're a female, or maybe because they have daughters, you know?
Yeah, that's helpful. Thank you, Tasha. Thank you. And thank you for giving me an hour of your morning. And it's just so exciting. We are, you know, our women are registering. They're asking lots of questions. They've been fundraising because, you know, a lot of our women come from, a really diverse background where, you know, some might be able to write a quick check for $99 to cover the basic registration. But others, it takes a lot of fundraising at the church level to be able to support our women so that they can be a part of this. And bringing in you and all our other guests is for them, for their growth, for their to get closer to Jesus, to get closer to each other, to be doing this kingdom work, to bring people to Jesus. So I just loved hearing you talk, and just you would just drop scripture here and there, like it says in Revelation, Corinthians. Like it was, you know, just knowing that you are so that your ministry is based on the Bible and the love of Jesus just gives us more affirmation to what we're going to experience together at Arise and Shine. So I hope you're excited, because we're really excited.
I'm really excited. I love that churches are leading into this conversation, that organizations are leading into this conversation, and being willing to have this difficult and awkward talk, and it doesn't feel good. And I think, you know, there's nothing to fear. I know that there's a lot of fear in having this conversation because we're afraid of the division that it can cause. But, you know, I look at, you know, scripture, and Jesus, he didn't run from difficult situations and difficult conversations. And some of his biggest critics were the religious people. Mm-hmm. And I think there's so much we can learn from the life of Jesus and how he responded, how he led through that. So, you know, I'm excited about being at Rise and Shine. And, you know, and I would even encourage people, you know, even as they begin walking this out, you know, walking this inclusion, if there's someone that you know that's going to be excluded because of financial, you know, if you have the ability to pay for two, you know, registrations, do that, you
yes.
know. You know, invite people that you think that can benefit from this this experience. And, you know, there's a lot of people that are hurting, and they're looking to the church, to God's people for comfort. They're looking for answers. They're looking for the right way. And so let's be that example. Let's be that credible witness for the glory of God.
Amen. Well, we have to wrap it up, and just so glad that we could learn from you, and just thank God for you and the ministry you've started and the work he began in you. So thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thanks again for listening. To learn more about Tasha and Be the Bridge, go to beabridgebuilder.com. And to register for the Arise and Shine Women's Conference, go to essentialwomenarise.com. And don't forget to RSVP on our Arise and Shine Facebook event page. See you next month.